Now,
do you need to be introduced?
No. My purpose is to initiate discussion. I hope, therefore, to be quite brief. The urgent call to the Kirk was received with surprised delight by us conservative evangelicals. The most frequent comment on it was, "We've been doing these things for years." The question I want to raise today, however, is just how far and in what ways we in this brotherhood do give priority to mission and evangelism. I regret that when I wrote to you the letter of invitation, I was quoting the urgent call from memory. And it is missions and evangelism that I wrote. That was a slip that was not designed to prejudice the discussion in any way. The urgent call speaks of mission and evangelism, and of course one can have mission without missions. One can have mission and evangelism without missions. The question then that I'm asking is, do we in this brotherhood give priority to mission and evangelism? The answer, I believe, is yes, we do. Most of us have now, and all of us have had at one time, unconverted congregations. Every Sunday of life, therefore, we are seeking to win them for Christ, calling on them to come to the Savior, to stop trusting in themselves that they are righteous, but to receive the righteousness that comes from God in Christ. We are engaged thus in a continuous, sustained, and urgent evangelistic campaign, week in, week out, year in, year out. We are all evangelists in our pulpits every Sunday of life. Where we may fail, however, to be evangelists is outside the pulpit, in man-to-man personal work. Is it far easier to be brave and challenging in the pulpit than at the fireside or the bedside? It is possible that pulpit evangelism is one gift, personal evangelism another. We may have the first, but not the second. There may be some amongst us who have the second, but not the first. But it would seem good to seek both gifts, as it is in personal work that we would naturally look to gather the harvest of what we sow in the pulpit. It may not be the gift that we lack, the gift of personal evangelism, but the technique. Here is where training may come in. Nothing, I should say, in our academic preparation for the ministry will have taught us how to be soul winners. And I venture to suggest that there may not have been much either in our vitally important informal training, whether it was at Gilcomston or Holyrood or Sandiford or wherever, to teach us this holy technique. I share the suspicion of many about techniques contained in handbooks with titles like Soul Winning Made Easy. It exists, the book exists. It was a good many years ago now when the Gideon International had their conference here, and that was the textbook, Soul Winning Made Easy. But I would hazard a guess that many of us feel a genuine need for some help at this weak point in our ministries. We will say then that we are evangelists to our unconverted congregations. What about the community firth of the congregation? Well, let's not ignore the work we do as school, hospital, industrial, and other chaplains. But if we are challenged about what we are doing about the community at large, the answer that we may give, and give with a good conscience, is our evangelism of the community is the members of our congregation, such of them as know the Lord, whom we teach in the word and seek to build up in Christ. They are his witnesses out there in the workaday world, being for him and doing for him, and as they have opportunity, saying a word for him and the gospel. I speak with some special interest in this matter because it was through such a witness that I was won for Christ over 30 years ago. However, I would acknowledge that the man who so won me by the quality of his life and witness was a particularly articulate individual. And here again, therefore, I ask the question whether training should come in. Many of our godly people might be much more effective evangelists if they were shown how to give a reason for the hope that is in them. We come now to missions, in association with which, incidentally, the kind of training I have in mind is often given. When we think of having a parish mission, we may think first of all of calling in a student team, of having a UCCF campaign. Much received wisdom in the church these days does not, however, look with favor on the UCCF campaigns, because the students, by doing, as they say, the congregation's work for it, prevent the congregation bestirring themselves to be their own evangelists. And that campaign is best, it is argued, that is undertaken by the local people themselves and sustained by them in the long term. And no doubt there is a good deal to be said for that. But if a man has scarce a soul in his congregation to help him, he may properly feel that he has no option but to call in the team from outside. But let's suppose that we decide to have a parish mission using local resources. The principal difficulty would seem to be finding the team to do it. The Kirk Session will resolve to have a mission, but they won't go out. The board will resolve to finance the mission, but they won't go out. The guild, God bless them, may resolve to bake for the mission, but they won't go out. What are we left with? The folk of the prayer meeting, all six of them, or 10 or 12 of them, blessed is the man who can call on so many. These prayer fellowship few may be augmented by one or two others whose spiritually shaky presence may have the advantage of giving some color to the notion that this is a congregational mission and not just an effort by the prayer meeting people, who are sometimes not the most popular folk about the church. I hope that some of us who have had experience at this will tell us afterwards whether it works, and that any of us who are skeptical will also speak up. I come finally to crusade evangelism, concerning which the feelings of this brotherhood may range from enthusiasm through unease to downright hostility. Oh. That's not preparing to you, dear father. I think I'm right in saying that the objection of some of us to the Billy Graham type crusade is not to the message or the theology of evangelists, though some of us might have reservations on that score, but perhaps to their methods, or we may feel that the evangelistic crusade is a distraction from the ongoing work of building up the church, building up people in the faith, the work whose results are, we believe, in the end, qualitatively better. But the case for our declining to throw our weight behind crusades when they come along may at times seem a subtle one, and one that is not easily put to or understood by the keen evangelicals among our folk, who would happily bus the entire congregation to the Kelvin Hall if they could. And because it is subtle, it needs frequent restating and clarification. To sum up, we give priority to mission and evangelism, firstly, in our continual evangelization of our unconverted congregations. Any other point on that, before I move on to the next question, then? The next question is it your opinion that we may be defective in personal evangelism and that there is a place for training and technique here?
I would like to join issue with you about you and Johnny Boxall. No, no, we just said, mentioned our congregation and others. When Johnny Boxall in 1946 stood with...
Yes, yes, I'm standing here. You have some...
came to our church along with Ian Lawson and all these other chaps. He was interested because Tony Dan, he had been a Christian before. Johnny Bock, who was the other one?
Laurie Campbell.
And one or two others had been converted in the officers' training corps. They were combining a course to the first year of the... No, it was after the war, 46. They were combining a course at the barracks with the first year university, and they came to us, and a batch of them were converted. And he was the last. I think it was a week before they all left Aberdeen for good. And he came to me. He'd been in church on Sunday, and he came to me one Tuesday afternoon, and he was a cynical little blighter. What is all this that had happened to his friends? And you see, and I sat with him in the manse for I think it would have been about 2 minutes, and then I got up and I said, "All right, go," and I put him out. and he came. I don't know if you call that technique or not. But he came back the next Sunday and was converted, and then he was away from Aberdeen the Monday or the Tuesday. Now...
Is Stafford? And then he came to Stafford and was converted.
How?
What
happened? Oh, I don't know. Some of these chaps had influenced him.
You see, let us...
That was my technique.
Let us come... Yes.
Let us come to me from all the acts of this fellowship. And I'm heartened and thrilled to hear this kind of thing. We've been encouraged in these last few months. Six have come to know the Lord, and words that kind. And I'm never quite sure what this means. Whether it means that the gospel has been preached and it looks as though we're getting less and less light as this discussion. When we hear that six people have come to know, six people have been converted, I never quite know whether it means that the gospel has been preached and the minister has observed that some half dozen are now keen and coming to church twice and coming to prayer meetings and obviously talking with all, whether he's just observed this happening. Or whether it is that they've been at his communicants class or something and they have professed faith. Or whether there have been personal encounters in the vestry in which, quote, he has led them to the Lord, unquote. That's the question I'm asking. That's what I want to know about technique. And whether there is... You don't look as though you're following me. Am I being followed?
Yes.
Yes. Right. Anyone see something about that?
Sadly, I think Mr. Still make a point this morning about the difference between teaching and training. And I really feel very strongly that there is a difference between teaching and training, and that there is a need for training in specific areas of discipleship. And I think this is the point that you're stretching for here. I mean, do we teach our people about specific areas of discipleship, or do we, under God, expect that he will teach them through the expository preaching of the word? That's the point you're trying to make,
that
I think.
Is, that's exactly what I should stand
up. Right.
That man's holding up his hand.
Yes, well, he had already spoken. I was hoping to see if somebody else would. No, there is no one else. The floor is yours.
I have seen both happen, and I believe that there is a place for teaching technique. In my instruction class, which lasts for 6 months and only happens once a year, one of the things that they are taught is from the SEAN material, you've probably heard of it, SEAN, Study by Extension for All Nations, in which one of the something like 18 lessons is how to lead somebody to Christ. And while emphasizing that it's not a technique, I teach them the technique, and they find a pleasure in grasping. I can show the person the way in which Jesus is good news with these four little pictures. And then we pray about, let us report in a month's time or in a week's time, depending on the sort of thing we have. Let us ask God to give us an opportunity, each of us who now knows that we know Christ, to speak for Jesus in some way between now and, let's say, 2 weeks' time, at which we shall find out whether that has happened. And they then have a tool, which of course is taught as, this is a technique that isn't a technique. In other words, of course it's got to be interpersonal. But I believe there is a place for equipping people specifically with the way of the Lord.
Yes, this is the you're teaching your congregation.
I'm teaching individuals in the instruction class.
Yes.
The instruction class consists of old members. It always every year consists of old members who say, "Can I do a refresher?" And people who haven't got the first clue and still end up at the church 6 months later. And those who some of them year by year have come to Christ during the 6 months.
Yes, your observation is slightly further downstream from the point we're at the moment, which is really whether we as ministers have the technique. Not, it is the same thing.
I don't know whether it's right for me to mention the Baptist Church in this august congregation, but I do remember Pastor Kennedy in California, the Baptist Church there, who came to the conclusion, although he had the gospel and he could preach the gospel, he could not communicate the gospel to the layman. And here he was trying to get his congregation to go out and do the job that he wasn't able to do. And in his book, Evangelism Explosion, which some of you will know about, he gives a technique there that he had learned over a period of time, and which he endeavoured to teach his congregation by example, taking them out one by one. And they were learning on the job, learning how to deal with each particular situation. And I think that the results speak for themselves, and that congregation grew tremendously. I don't know whether that would make any...
Thank you. I mean, I understand that Martin Lloyd-Jones had the one gift but not the other. Is that so? That he was a pulpit evangelist but not very bright when it came to...
Well, he was a marvellous counsellor. No doubt about
that. Oh, well, I'm wrong.
Personal counsellor.
Yes.
I wonder if I could come in and
respond to
this point. I wonder if there needs to be a distinction made between a technique for opening the subject call the person, and coming into a situation where a person is ready to speak. I've had quite a few experiences of coming in after preaching to a situation where a person wants to speak about the Christian faith.
Yeah.
And I find I don't need a technique for that, because the way is already open. I find that I gain confidence with the person as time goes on, and have a method of probing questions and so on. I wonder if we need to. I don't know if you can learn a technique, depending on your personality, that will open the subject cold with a person who has not previously mentioned an interest in it.
Yes, when you say that you have a way with people who have been listening to the gospel, and we would all echo that and feel that yes, we can identify with that. Do you have a way of bringing them to the place where they close with Christ?
I wouldn't say that I do, no.
You wouldn't say that you do.
I continue with them at the point they're at. I have never ever actually said, make a decision. I have encouraged them all.
Yes, it's this matter that I'm interested in. Whether
but that's perhaps a special gift that some people certainly have, can bring people right to the point of decision. Other people try it and just fail.
Yes,
but some people have the gift. Old couples. You know the name? Who was in Israel? Some of you know?
Couples, yeah.
well, I've forgotten his connections now, but he was marvellous amongst the forces in the Middle East during the war, Egypt and Israel. Yes, marvellous. They just he just drew them in like that because he had a gift. I wish we could get away from the artificial word technique. I think it's a horrid word.
Well, in a sense, I'm quite anxious to use the horrid word to see it, to show exactly what we're talking about. I mean, that there is. You use the word gift, and this wonderful man that you've spoken of has this gift. Now, are we going to? Some of us will have it, some of us don't have it. Those of us who don't have it, what are we going to do?
Shouldn't we all be soul winners? Not only from the pulpit, but in our pastoral work. That many of us are aware, as we look back on our training, that was only one of the many fields that was not touched on in any way whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And therefore, many of us have been found ourselves in situations where we have looked on others. Didn't the Lord take his disciples with him, and wasn't in being with him, that was the learning process. They saw him at work and then he sent them out. I stand here today and think back on the witness of D.P. Thompson. And I was converted under a mission which he conducted in my hometown, and then serving in mission with him. And certainly there were things to learn from that man. And I'm sure that there are many in Scotland today who learned much from him. And if I have any particular technique, it was because I looked at him, I saw him at work, I knew him as a man who would never ask anyone to do anything that he was not prepared to do himself. And he was a very demanding Christian. Any of us that knew him will witness to that, a very demanding Christian. But nevertheless, we learned in that school. And yet, one feels that there is an inadequacy, and that many of us are sent out into the ministry. And there is a training required in that field. And I believe that if we... again, thinking of the scriptures, we know that one of the gifts is to be an evangelist. We know that Paul also says that we are to seek the gifts. And also there may be, I think it was David Watson, who recently died, who in one of his tapes mentioned that the gifts can be there, but the gifts are there to be developed. And therefore, if there are others who have been sharing in this work, and who have the joy of personal evangelism, leading people to the Lord, if they then can share with us, I'm sure it would help many more, as it were, to be more efficient, mm-hmm. and as it were, to learn the way in, to build the bridge of friendship, to get alongside people, as well as it were, telling them from the pulpit that they need Christ, and the way of salvation made plain and clear there. And I'm sure that conversion takes place there as we preach the word. But also there are these other places of opportunity. I think there is something to learn that we might, to bring under your own word, Sandy, technique.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Stephen.
If I may start from a slightly different angle, but I think I would come to it. Can I say that we do need to distinguish, first of all, between mission and evangelism? I think Peter made the point. I think we need to distinguish very clearly, biblically, and that evangelism otherwise loses its whole sharpness and spear point. Where, as Jesus says, as the Father sent me, even so I sent you. The sending purposes of God are mission. Within that, there is a specific ministry of evangelism. And I would take issue with those who say that because we are called to the ministry of the word and sacrament, we are necessarily called or equipped with this particular gift of an evangelist. It is a specific and specialist gift, according to Ephesians 4 and 11. Some apostles, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers.
Yes.
It is a specific gift, which brings me to the point that we need to distinguish between witness, which may well involve soul winning, and the specific gift of evangelism. When I was converted, I thought that witness meant I had to go up to everyone and say, "Are you saved?" And I put a lot of people off as a result. We need to distinguish. We are all called upon to witness, but we are not all called upon as evangelists. And I would suggest that the many men in the pulpits were not given the gift of an evangelist, and that we should, within the body, use that gift. And one of the previous speakers, I embarrass him by naming him, Bob is a man with that specific gift.
Yes.
Now, I think most of us would recognize that.
Yes.
And the tragedy is that that gift has not been used as an evangelist within the church. The personal work and the personal technique, and I abhor technique, I do believe that those who are called to this and gifted for can benefit from training and help from others, whether it's DP following the example or a book. And I would thoroughly recommend that. And going one point further into the congregation, I would plead that we set free the laos who are gifted in this area. There may only be six. There may only be two in the congregation, but to set them free to put into practice the gift that God has given them, so that we may truly see Scotland reached with the gospel. My challenge is that every single parish here, there should not be a single person who does not know the gospel within that parish. That is our responsibility. We are to tell them of Christ. And we cannot do it, and I suggest we must set free those in the congregations who are gifted and encourage them to do so, to send them out, and then we'll see Scotland won for Christ. I'm sorry to have taken
time. Not at all. Oh, thank you very much. Any other point?
Speak up, David. Can't hear you.
Sorry.
Sorry.
I have my Bible open at Ephesians 4:11, which Stephen referred to, and it gives where the some should be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers, and so on. And we're all very conscious of that. But the Apostle Paul also went on to say to Timothy, "As for you, always be steady, endure suffering, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry." And while I agree entirely with what Stephen has said, that it's quite clear that to be an evangelist is a gift. And I've noticed in my ministry that I seem to prepare the ground through my preaching, and someone else comes in and proclaims the gospel, and people are converted. There's no question about that. That's happened time and time again. But there is this tension within all of us that the apostle says, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry. And I think some of us feel that refers to us, we ought to be doing the work of an evangelist, and yet we don't have to do it. And that, I think, is a paradox that we've been putting on us to a certain extent. When it comes to techniques, can I just say something that everyone here is very conscious of, that when we look at the way in which the Lord dealt with people, he treated each single individual quite differently. And the thing that makes me a little bit frightened about the wee booklets with techniques is that we have to assume in these wee booklets that everyone we're confronting or encountering is at that particular stage in the whole work of God in their lives. And how many of us would have treated the Syrophoenician woman in the way the Lord treated the Syrophoenician woman? I mean, he ignored her.
she was screaming in the street. The disciples were embarrassed, and then he called her a dog. And she was converted. And it's this gift of discernment, knowing where a person is. And you can make the most incredible case going through the Gospels and seeing how Jesus dealt with different individuals, all of them in totally different ways. So I would be, whatever the technique, remember that folk are not egg-shaped souls. They're people, each one an individual in their own right. And the four spiritual laws and so on, I think, have a great danger.
Thank you.
I would like a little bit of help on the question of fulfilling the first question, really, about preaching, evangelizing, and mission in the ordinary course of the ministry. And it relates to what we're talking about now, because I sometimes feel that where I do fail is in providing people with an opportunity to come back to me and talk. I mean, that's quite a simple thing, really. Although I stand at the door, and we haven't a very big congregation normally, and I can see people individually. But in a sense, the framework of our meetings is not pointing towards that place where people will talk with the minister or someone else about the questions that have arisen in the course of the sermon for them, the question of their soul salvation, for example. And I'm a wee bit worried about that one from my own point of view. And if anyone has any light to shed on that, how one goes about it, I'd be very glad to hear it.
Well, may I say, what Stephen said and what David said both seems to suggest, you see, that the part of the gift is a bringing people to the point of committing themselves. One can do all the preparation and yet not be used. I'm sure this man couple's head, you see, he was able to bring people to the point and confront them with Christ in such a way as they could not but decide. And I think that more than preaching the gospel, evangelizing, you see, is the distinct gift of bringing people to the point. Stephen, would you agree with that?
Entirely, and I would look at the end of Acts 17 as the example. That there was a crisis point. That's the mark of an evangelist. That
yes,
people
yes.
are brought to a crisis point. Not necessarily into Christ. Some of them go well away from it. But they're brought to a crisis. And that is a specific gift.
Yes. Harry wanted to say something.
Yes, thanks.
Yes,
I take the point about it being a specific gift to some people, but I think often people don't know that they have it until they have a go, and have a jolly good go and work at it for a while. I was really more going to come back at David's point, which is to say that while we recognise that people are individuals, one of the things that we try and do a lot with CUs is help them to understand basically what's going on when somebody is getting converted, so that they can adapt that to the person that they're talking to. But it's very difficult to do that, if you like, to teach that adaptable, responsive way of evangelism, without at some point giving a fairly clear, simple, straightforward model or pattern. And at that level, something like the four spiritual laws can be very helpful. But what it's really doing is explaining what's going on when somebody's converted. It's explaining what it means for them to have one spirit outside of Christ, enemies of God, alienated from God, brought to a place where they're in Christ, they're God's friends, and so on. And then they have to take that pattern away. But if you just always talk about the need to be responsive, the need to be sensitive to individuals, the need to tailor the gospel to each different person, I think very often people go away very, very confused, and the whole business is so complicated that I could never have a go.
Now there, I'm afraid we must end the discussion. The clock has struck. We did promise Peter that he would begin at 3, and you would appreciate that that's one exercise we do not wish to hurry in any way.